Hey, Rob Bradford here. I have set out on a mission with my good friends at FanDuel to prove what I have known for some time. Baseball isn't boring. Now I have a daily podcast to prove it with some of the most notable people in the baseball world screaming baseball isn't boring from the mountaintops, or at least agreeing to come on our show. Players, managers, GMs, and yes, even the commissioner of baseball, Rob Manfred. It has been a constant wave of baseball's most powerful voices. So join the revolution. Subscribe and soak in Baseball Isn't Boring. Listen on your Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. You'll be glad you did.
He is one of our own, and when I say that, I mean a KMOX alum. Not just a KMOX alum, an accomplished broadcaster. Not just an accomplished broadcaster, a Hall of Fame football player. He's someone that St. Louis is very proud of, KMOX certainly is. It is an absolute pleasure to visit this hour with Hall of Famer Dan Dierdorf in this edition of KMOX Profiles. I'm Tom Ackerman, and we are joined by Dan Dierdorf at his home here in St. Louis. And gosh, I just kind of walked over. You and I are pretty close by.
I would say, what do you figure, 100 yards?
Yeah, something like that. Yeah. Well, I can't
believe not much more than a sand wedge, I'll say that.
That's right. I can't believe we haven't done this before. Thank you for having me over, and it's a real treat to be able to chat. You and I just talked for a while before we even turned on the recorder, and I like that. I just have always appreciated you, and I like being able, I feel like you and I could just sit here and tell stories forever. We only have an hour with commercials here this hour, but we'll have some fun doing it. And I think that's part of our business, isn't it, in radio? If you think back to your career at KMOX, we're storytellers, and you're one of the best.
Well, it's everybody would always, you know, the majority of my career was in television. But I started in radio, and people would always ask me, don't you love doing television? And I said, yeah, I do, but nothing is better than radio. Nothing is better than radio. I said, in television, you are always chasing the picture. You've got to talk about what's on the screen, or the guy at home is going, what the heck is he talking about? There's a freedom in radio that once you get used to it, it can really spoil you, because you only go where you want to go. You're telling the story that you want to tell. And I look back on my days at KMOX and with nothing but great fondness. It was a wonderful part of my life.
How did it start for you? Terrific offensive lineman with the St. Louis Cardinals, and before that, the University of Michigan. We're going to talk about those experiences. But it was fairly quickly, wasn't it, that you transitioned into radio?
Well, I actually did it while I was still mm-hmm. playing for the Cardinals. I will give Bill Bidwell credit. He did not have a problem with me working at KMOX while I was still an active player. So I retired from football in 83. I would say in 1976, I started doing some part-time work at KMOX. I actually filled in. Jim Bakken and Jim Hart had a radio show. They do an hour on Saturday afternoon. They called it The Arm and the Leg. And Jim Bakken went to his home state of Wisconsin for like a 3-week vacation. And I don't know whose idea it was, but they asked me if I would sit in with Jim Hart for those 3 weeks while Jim Bakken was gone. And all I can tell you is the red light came on and I just started to talk. And it went from there. And Robert Hyland was... Robert Hyland had an influence on my life that I will never forget.
He was a special man, a very influential man here in St. Louis. And I know that his presence meant a lot to you, that you knew that when he spoke, everything that he said had a purpose to it. And with KMOX's best interests in mind, but he took great care of the people that worked for him, didn't he?
Well, he most certainly did. He was demanding. He was imposing. There are so many stories that surround Bob Hyland. But the simple truth, and I'm not, you had to live in St. Louis at the time and be active in St. Louis, but the reality is Bob Hyland was the general manager of an AM radio station. That's what he was. In an era where FM radio had appeared on the scene and everybody loved FM and all that, Bob Hyland was the general manager of an AM radio station. And he was the most powerful man in the city of St. Louis. Now, what kind of person do you have to be for that to be your launching pad to go where Bob Hyland went? And there is no disputing that Bob Hyland was the most powerful man in the city of St. Louis. He could build coalitions. He could get anybody basically to do just about anything for the betterment of the city of St. Louis.
What was his feedback on your work early on when you started back in 1976?
It was all very positive. It was, technically I was part of the sports department, and, you know, just imagine, I'm sitting in that sports department and I'm sitting there with Jack Buck. I'm sitting there with Bill Wilkerson. I'm sitting there with Dan Kelly. I'm sitting there with Bob Costas. I'm sitting there with Gary Bender. We're Jack Carney's walking around, Bob Hardy. I worked at Camo X when it was to call it a juggernaut is, it's not nearly descriptive enough. But yeah, I worked for Jack, and so I got plenty of feedback from Jack, and it was some of the most constructive. It was wonderful.
You can hear Jack Buck in you. What did you learn from him in his style?
Well, Jack, first of all, Jack always, Dan, just talk like you're talking to the guy sitting on the bar stool next to you. And then, you know, one year, my first year, Jack and I were actually the broadcast team for the football Cardinals in 1984. Jack, it was, as hard as that is to believe, we were the radio team for the Cardinals in 84. And I'll never forget this as long as I live. One time we went to a commercial break and Jack, gave me the signal to take off my headset. And I said, what? He goes, I just want to give you a heads up that since the last time we went to a commercial break, you used the word incredible three times. And he goes, Dan, that can really be irritating. So do this. He says, get a Rolodex in your head of adjectives and don't use, when you use one, put it away. Put it away and don't use it for, and I've never forgotten that. I mean, that was my upbringing. That's the kind of thing that I got exposed to that, when he had that conversation with me, that was a long, long time ago, and I've never forgotten it.
You talk about a guy who could light up a room.
Oh.
What an unbelievable person and ambassador for this city. Can't say enough. I imagine that when you started to spend some time with him and you saw how people reacted to him, you realized who you were dealing with there.
I'm so fortunate that Jack was such a part of my life that he was so much more than just my boss at Camo X. We got to spend so much time together. He brought me into his poker club. I'll tell you, one of the things that was really dear to me was later on when I started doing Monday Night Football. Jack was doing Monday Night Football with Hank Stram on CBS Radio, and I would be there doing it, obviously, for ABC Television, and we had a lot of money at TV, so I always had a limousine at my disposal when I went to the airport. I'd go in before Jack. Jack would sometimes not come in till Monday. But on Tuesday mornings, we would always fly home together. And we'd be at different hotels, and I would swing by and pick up Jack. And we'd go to the airport together, and we'd be on the airplane together. We'd sit together. I'd go, "You need a ride home?" He'd go, "No, Carol's picking me up." And blah. I got to spend around the holidays. I got to spend so much time with Jack, and I was blessed. An extraordinary man.
He lived not far from where we sit. Actually,
been to his house many times, and you know, and Joe gets upset when. We would go down to spring training, and Mr. Hyland would want me to go down there, and I'd host some radio shows from down there, so we'd be at the ballpark, and I'd go up to the press box, and I'd watch. We were there at Old Al Lang Stadium, mm-hmm. and I'd be up behind Jack and Mike and Joe. Joe would be running around, and Joe couldn't have been more than 8 or 9 years old when I'm up there, and I'll never. Joe gets upset when I tell this story. Joe, I hope you're not listening, but I put my knee up on a chair, and I sat Joe up on my knee so he could see over his dad and Mike Shannon. After about 10 minutes, my leg went to sleep because Joe was a substantial young man. and my leg fell. And I remember the last time I told this story in Joe's presence, and he said, "You know, Dan, I'm really over that story." Sorry, Joe. Way it goes. But you were chunky.
We're back on KMOX Profiles. Tom Ackerman with Hall of Famer Dan Dierdorf. We were talking about Joe Buck before the break, and what a great person he is. I just, people don't know him behind the scenes like you and I do. I know that he is the face of Fox Sports, so he'll receive criticism that broadcasters are going to get it. I mean, you have to have a thick skin in this business. But what I love about Joe is he's just real, and he is so self-deprecating. I thought his book was phenomenal. I loved hearing stories about the connection he has with his father, but also how he took this career on his own and dealt with some self-doubt. He is like an open book in a lot of ways. I really respect Joe in that way, don't you?
Well, having a famous father, a Hall of Fame father, can't be easy. And Joe talks about it, you know, being the blessing that, you know, obviously Jack got Joe into the business and gave him a leg up. But there, you know, that's a pretty high bar when you're the son of Jack Buck. And all the things you said about Joe, his self-deprecating sense of humor, all this and all that, I'll just say two things about Joe. One, the quality of the human being. Joe Buck is a fine man. He's a great father. He's just a good person. I don't think Joe has ever done anything malicious to anyone his entire life. Secondly, I don't care who your father is. When you have talent like Joe Buck, that didn't come from anybody else but you. No one is responsible for Joe's success except Joe. Joe is remarkably talented. And I have worked with what I always thought was the best play-by-play guy that I've ever been with. That's Al Michaels. I wish I could have done an event with Joe Buck, because I put Joe and Al Michaels there stride for stride. Joe Buck is he's just damn good.
He is outstanding in everything he does.
And again, we're not talking about that because I know him.
Right.
I'm just trying to be as analytical as I possibly could be. You know, yes, Joe has detractors. So does Al Michaels. So did John Madden. So does everybody.
Everybody.
I got hate mail from both cities. That's the only way you knew you were doing a good job. If you got the same, it's familiarity breeds contempt, and the more people see you, the more they like to get on your case. But the reality is simply this: Joe is where he is because Joe is tremendous.
Think about, you brought up the name Al Michaels, but you know, think about the names that came from KMOX, and we talked about all of them. And then, you know, somebody you brought up a little earlier in Bob Costas, there's another one who has been able to ascend to a tremendous career and I'm sure has taken his amount of criticism through the years. Bob has an incredible way of navigating through that. And if you put him up against, and not to favor one over the other, but Bob's overall excellence is nearly unmatched, really, if you think about what he's been able to do in his career. When you look back at the first time you met Bob Costas, think about where he started at KMOX at the age of 22. What was he like then?
Well, I was there when Bob Costas showed up at 22. He was young Bobby Costas back then, and you know, he would, you know, Jack Carney would, you know, deride him about, you know, folding his underwear and all this. And I mean, he was, when Bob rolled into town, you know, who knew where that was headed? The one thing I'll say about Bob, and this is no secret, it's Bob's intellect. Bob is brilliant. I don't ever go in a room where I feel inadequate. I don't think Joe Buck does. I don't think Al Michaels does. And people, Bob Costas is brilliant. I mean, Bob Costas is the kind of guy that if he hadn't turned his love towards the sports world, I wouldn't be the least bit surprised if Bob was a guy that was Google or Microsoft. Bob Costas is a brilliant man.
You seem to feel like he still has so much more to share with the world and do, and we'll see where that all goes. You know, you go back to your times with him at KMOX, and I'm certain that there were some brilliant moments of talking about baseball and football and breaking down sports. But isn't it something that the most famous moment between you two has to do with the hot dog stand? Now, he's told the story. In fact, the three of us were on the air one time telling the story together, but he's told it so many times. I want to hear it from your perspective. Tell me how it came to be that Woofies, Dan Dierdorf, and Bob Costas created a KMOX legendary segment.
Well, Bob started doing games. He started doing baseball games for NBC. Mm-hmm. And the games were always on a Saturday. So Bob would travel on Friday. And I was doing Sports Open Line on Friday evening. And we just fell into this. Bob would do we called it the Friday Frank Forecast, where he would actually, he would go all Guy Fieri on us and critique the hot dog at whatever ballpark he was there to cover the game the next day. So one weekend he wasn't traveling to do it, and there got to be some great hot dogs here in St. Louis. So Woofies comes around. So we decide to do this, and what we did is Bob left the station early and drove to Woofies. Now, this sounds crazy, but it was just brand new to have a car phone. This is, and it was a big piece of equipment.
It came in a bag, right?
Yeah, well, the one I had was mounted in the trunk of my car.
Yeah.
It was probably the size of a briefcase, but the phone was actually mounted on my you know, up front on the hump there in between seats. So I actually had a working car phone. And so what I did was, live on the air, I drove through the drive-through window at Woofie's, and Bob was inside waiting on me. Bob is, and we do this whole segment of me ordering a hot dog, and he's collecting the money, and he's making the dog, and we did some crazy stuff. Did he ever tell you the wrestling story?
Oh yeah, tell that one. So that's and Keefe is part of this.
Can you,
broadcast crew?
Oh, I don't know how we talked Mr. Highland into allowing us to do this, but the old arena now is sold out, and it's wrestling night. The feature match is Hulk Hogan against Mr. Wonderful Paul Orndorff, who's managed by Bobby the Brain Heenan. So somehow we convince Bob Highland to let this be broadcast live on Camwex. So we make this big spectacle out of it. It's a three-man booth. It's Bob Costas and myself in tuxedos and Ann Keefe in a ball gown. Ann Keefe looks like she's going to somewhere at the White House, and we are sitting ringside doing this, and Bob gets up in the ring, and I got to tell you, this was the only moment that really made me sad we were on radio and not television, because it is some sight to see Bob Costas standing next to Hulk Hogan. But we, honest to God, we had a lot of fun back then. It was a lot of good times.
Welcome back to KMOX Profiles. Tom Ackerman just telling some stories with Dan Dierdorf and having a good time with it. You have so many. What a terrific career, starting with the St. Louis Cardinals, broadcasting with KMOX at that time, and following your playing career, you stayed with KMOX, but you also transitioned into doing some television, and you worked with CBS and were very much involved with their NFL broadcasts. Their telecasts featured some great personalities, didn't they, and still do?
Yeah, when I first started doing television, I went to CBS TV, and the reason I got hired there was that they had heard me working at CBS Radio. Jack Buck was very instrumental in getting me about 10 or 12 shots on CBS radio. You know, he and Hank Stram would be off doing somewhere. And I worked with, this is no joke, the first time I'm ever in a broadcast booth, I'm working with Lindsey Nelson. I'm working with Ray Scott. I did games with Dick Stockton. And I'm getting all this experience. And then I went to work for CBS television for 2 years. And it was working at CBS was all I ever wanted to do. Back then they broadcast most of the Cardinals games, and I'd look up at that broadcast booth, and they had the eyeball on a banner hanging out of there, and it was Tommy Brookshire and Pat Summerall, and all I ever wanted to do was work for CBS television. And of course I was working at a CBS owned and operated station at Camo X. My life was exactly where I wanted it to be.
Can't imagine what that's like to put on that jacket for the first time with an eyeball on it.
I used to, a lot of guys took their jacket off after the game and carried it. I wore it through the airport. I'm not going to lie. I didn't take it off till I walked in the house when I got home. I was so proud of that.
How did it come to be that you were paired with Al Michaels on Monday Night Football? You talk about an iconic brand, Monday Night Football. That was it. I mean, it's different today. Games are broadcast almost every night, it seems.
Yeah.
Thursday night, you got a Saturday nighter. You got your Monday nights. Of course, Sunday night carries a lot of prominence. But Monday Night Football was the show. How did that happen?
Well, I'm very fortunate in that I did Monday Night Football when it was still Monday Night Football. After only 2 years at CBS Television, Monday Night had Cosell had retired, Meredith had retired. They were in a position where they were using. They had O.J. Simpson and Joe Namath were doing games with Frank Gifford, and then new management came in. Dennis Swanson took over ABC Sports, and he made a move. He brought in Al Michaels. Now this was '86, which was my last year at CBS. He brought in Al Michaels and moved Frank Gifford over to color, and the two of them did Monday Night Football by themselves in 1986. Now, at the time, I was the number two guy at CBS after only two to John Madden. You know, John Madden and Pat Summerall were the number one crew. And ABC, my contract was going to be up. ABC came to me and offered me Monday Night Football. And you're right, back then, Monday Night Football, we had the best games every week. We had ratings that the people today could only dream about. And it was 12 years. It was, I told him, call me the next time some analyst hangs on this job for 12 years. Hasn't happened since. And I don't look for it to happen anytime soon.
It was a great run. And you went back to CBS and did AFC games with Greg Gumbel for a long time. What a pairing that was. What a nice man. And great personality Greg Gumbel is. You two were very good together.
Yeah, my contract expired at Monday Night, and we had new management come in, the guy who ran ESPN. We were bought by Disney, and he wanted to make a change, and you know that's the way it goes in this business. It was, you know, so after 12 years, I CBS wanted to hire me back. And my first year back at CBS, I worked for a whole year with Vern Lundquist, who's a great friend of mine. And then 5 years or so, I think I worked with Dick Enberg. Mm-hmm. And then I got paired with Greg. And then Greg and I worked, I think, 9 years together. And you're right, Greg Gumbel is the nicest guy you ever met. I mean, we had a wonderful time. He's a dear friend to this day. And Greg's still working, which is, Greg, you know, Greg's a couple years older than I am, and he's still banging away at it, and I give him a lot of credit. There's nobody that doesn't like Greg Gumbel. Just a good man.
You finally, capping your broadcasting career, have spent time on the radio crew at the University of Michigan, back at your alma mater. You have gone from NFL stadiums every Sunday for 43 years to the Big Ten and some terrific non-conference matchups in a university that I know is near and dear to your heart. There is something very special about hearing you doing Michigan games, and I know that you feel it.
Well, when you work for a network, you have to be 100% impartial. And I know everybody thinks that when they listen to the game, you know, everybody, they think you have a bias. You know, the only bias any of us, and I'm going to speak now for every single person you watch doing a game on television. Our only bias is we would like it to be 28-28 at the start of the fourth quarter.
Yep.
That's all we want. We just don't want to be doing a stinker in the fourth quarter when you know. You know, on TV, we used to say, you can just lean out of the booth and hear TVs being clicked off all around America. That's the only thing we care about. But now, you know, I'm doing the games for my alma mater. I don't have to be neutral. I'm completely rooting for Michigan, and we do our broadcasts from a Michigan perspective. And it's on, I love it. I've had a great time with it. I love being around the kids, and like we were talking earlier, after being in an NFL stadium every Sunday for 43 consecutive years, I'd forgotten how much fun it is to be on a college campus on a Saturday afternoon. It's a lot of fun.
You really soak it in. You spend a lot of time the game day is a long day, but I know that you take in every moment. There are only a handful of Saturdays that you can do it, have a home college game.
Well, that's just and you know, that's right. There aren't as many games as there are on the NFL circuit. That's one of the reasons I do it. I used to hate the NFL having to work through the holidays. I mean, I've spent Christmas Eve in a hotel, Christmas Day in a hotel. You know, New Year's Eve, New Year's Day, you know, college football is over, you know, but our season ends a Saturday after Thanksgiving.
Right.
So I have the whole month of December, and that's one of the reasons I decided to do it. There are fewer games, but I'm just telling you, to be with your old teammates and your friends, the Friday night, the Saturday morning before kickoff, it's so much fun. And Debbie and I have just had a ball doing it.
What does it mean to be a Michigan man? What does that school mean to you going back to your playing career?
It's the foundation. It was the foundation for me going into the National Football League. I played for Bo Schembechler, who got me ready to play in the NFL. I'm so proud of... I mean, we're a university with a tremendous tradition. If you've never been there, I got to tell you, it's quite a sight to see 111 or 112,000 people in a football stadium all in the same place for a game. And the thing about Ann Arbor is they're there. There's 111,000 people there, whether it's Notre Dame or whether it's Middle Tennessee State. Every week, it's exactly the same. We've won more games. Yeah, we're having trouble with Ohio State right now. But let me tell you something. We have such a wonderful tradition that I'm just immensely proud to be a Michigan man. I am.
Final segment with Dan Dierdorf. It's great to be with the Hall of Famer. Let's talk some football. You had a tremendous career in broadcasting and continue it with Michigan, and we've had some fun reliving some of your KMOX days. And I just, you know, when I think of the St. Louis Cardinals, that team in the 1970s, coached by Don Coryell, had to have been some of the most fun. A team that was in, especially in 1975, your division championship, a team that never did make it to where you wanted to be ultimately. But what was that like then? I mean, this was a football town in the 1970s, without question.
Yeah, you know, we always, hey, let's, you know, too many people always want to talk about St. Louis as a baseball town, and they want to say that at the expense of football. Hey, the reality is, hey, we were all baseball Cardinal fans. How could you not? It's one of the most storied franchises in the history of any sport. I don't care, football, basketball, whatever. So it is what it is. But just we carved out, I think, a real segment of the St. Louis population that loved us, and this is a good football town. We proved it when the Rams were here. And I thought we proved it when the football Cardinals were here. It's got nothing to do with how successful the baseball Cardinals were. We had success. And I'll tell you what we had. We had characters. We had personality. We had some guys that were just really entertaining. I'll leave it at that.
I saw a picture of the offensive line together in the locker room, and I thought about, it's a great picture, and you all have your arms around each other after a game, and I thought about what that must have been like day to day, showing up to work. It's tough. I mean, you're in the NFL.
Oh, yeah.
Blocking is difficult work, especially pass blocking, which you had to do quite often. I have to guess that because of the people that you were with, you looked forward to getting there and getting things done.
I was in a locker room with Jackie Smith and Jim Hart and Jim Bakken and Larry Wilson. And I haven't even gotten around to the loony bins in my offensive line room. But I mean, it was the example that was set before us, Ernie McMillan and Irv Goody and all of these guys. It was, you're right, we did not win the big game. We never went to the Super Bowl or anything like that. But we were some collective group of personalities. I think people enjoyed us because there, in an era where you didn't look at football as entertainment, I think there was a level of entertainment with those old football teams.
Did you have to keep them in line? I mean, I don't picture you as somebody that, I mean, Conrad Dobler.
Yes.
Was, when I say that name, what comes to mind?
Conrad was a guy who proved that want to might be the single most important part of any athlete's makeup. Conrad wasn't the greatest athlete. He wasn't the most skilled technician. He survived initially because he wanted to do it more than anybody that I knew. He had a competitive fire that it burned white hot. And he was really different in that regard.
I know that you're very proud of your career. I have to imagine that this makes you ultimately the most proud is that, you know, you are from Canton, Ohio, and you get to see your bust in the Hall of Fame.
You mean that one?
Yeah. In Canton, Ohio. I mean, I can't even imagine what that's like.
No, I grew up a mile from the Pro Football Hall of Fame. I stood there when I was 13 years old with my father. We watched Pete Rozelle turn over a spadeful of dirt to begin construction of the building. As it turns out, there was another Hall of Famer in that crowd too, from about 25 miles up the road. Larry Zonka was standing there with his father as well. But I used to ride my bike down there while it was under construction. I went to every Hall of Fame game and enshrinement until I started playing in the NFL. And I am the only person in the Pro Football Hall of Fame that if I would have so chosen to do so, I could have slept in my own bed and got up and put on my yellow jacket and walked down to the Hall of Fame in about 15 or 20 minutes. My father had passed away, but my mother still lived in the house where I grew up, and I only lived a mile away. So, yes, it's. And by the way, while I'm telling Hall of Fame stories, I'm going to regress for 1 minute and just when I was a freshman at the University of Michigan, I am sitting in a class, and I became friends with the guy seated next to me. And we did not know how our lives were going to intersect and how our lives were going to be so similar in so many regards. But we really became friends. The guy sitting next to me in Ann Arbor, Michigan in 1967 was Ted Simmons.
Come on. Wow.
Ted's from Detroit. Part of his deal when he signed with the Cardinals was that they paid for him to go to the University of Michigan. And Ted leans over to me and he goes, "I'm not going to be here for a couple days." I said, "Where are you going?" "Well, they want me to go sit in the dugout. They're in the World Series." This is the fall of 1967. I think was that when they played the Red Sox? Or
yes.
And so I turn on the TV. Well, I'm watching the World Series and there's the guy sitting next to me. And of course, Ted went to spring training and never came back. But I'm just so happy for him and he's going to Cooperstown, and I'm really happy about it.
Two more things. I should say this. People always want to know, how's Dan doing? How are you getting around? How are you feeling? And how's the family?
I am very healthy. I am orthopedically, I'm a mess. I have difficulty walking. That's no secret. Anybody who sees me around town knows that. People will ask me, "Do you have any animosity towards the game of football?" And I'm really quick to tell everybody, I'm not like this because of the game of football. I'm like this because of AstroTurf. I'm like this because every single day we practiced on the floor of Busch Stadium. We had AstroTurf put in for training camp for 2-a-days. Mm-hmm. And if you were never on that old AstroTurf, it is nothing but asphalt with a piece of indoor-outdoor carpet rolled over it. We might as well have been practicing on the parking lot of South County Center. It ground every one of us, ground our joints into dust. We didn't know what was happening to it. It wasn't football. I'm crippled because of AstroTurf.
When you look back at your 13-year career in the league, what stands out to you?
The friendships that I made, because I can't look back at all the celebrations we had carrying the Lombardi Trophy around.
Right.
But I had lunch yesterday with Tim Carney and Jackie Smith and Johnny Rowland and Tim Van Gelder and Jim Hanifin.
That's pretty good.
Yeah, and you make friendships that last a lifetime. I'm so fortunate. I'm College Football Hall of Fame, the Pro Football Hall of Fame. Who dreams that? Who sits around and thinks that could actually happen to them? But I will always just look back, and the friendships that I have to this day with Jackie and Conrad Dobler and Ernie McMillan and, you know, Mel Gray and Jimmy Hart, and you can't put a price on that.
I appreciate this time very much. And if you ever, you know, run low on eggs or milk, or if you need a couple beers or something, you just let me know. I'll come down the hill.
You could roll down the hill. But I've learned that's where the rich people live up on the
right.
hill.
Yeah, right.
So it's so nice of you to come down here and visit the people in the lowlands. I really appreciate that. It's a real testament to me what a fine human being you are.
Oh, it's absolutely my pleasure.
You're blushing.
Dan Dierdorf, really appreciate it. Thank you.
You're very welcome. Love it.
Thanks for joining us in this edition of KMOX Profiles.
Hey, Rob Bradford here. I have set out on a mission with my good friends at FanDuel to prove what I have known for some time: baseball isn't boring. Now I have a daily podcast to prove it, with some of the most notable people in the baseball world screaming baseball isn't boring from the mountaintops, or at least agreeing to come on our show. Players, managers, GMs, and yes, even the commissioner of baseball, Rob Manfred. It has been a constant wave of baseball's most powerful voices. So join the revolution. Subscribe and soak in Baseball Isn't Boring. Listen on your Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. You'll be glad you did.